Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real
energy. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, super foods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Dr. Tenpenny on sabbatical for the time being. Now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other natural supplements to help you stay healthy naturally. We are here live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. At 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. The theme music for this show, written and produced by yours truly. We welcome your calls during the live show on Monday evenings. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week at attorney@vaccinerights.com, attorney@vaccinerights.com, and drtenpenny@gmail.com, drtenpenny@gmail.com. This is April 27th, 2015. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and we have one heck of a dynamite show for you this evening. Let me see, just a couple of quick reminders. and we'll dive in. I am also the host of a Tuesday night show called The Vaccine Agenda, also right here on blogtalkradio.com/The Vaccine Agenda, blogtalkradio.com, on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. And tomorrow night we'll be talking about some of the bills around the country in the current vaccine rights legislative crisis and why some of these bills and how some of these bills violate constitutional boundaries. Let's see, and you can help defray the costs of bringing you this show by purchasing The Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, an ebook available at vaccinerights.com. Okay, let's move on here. I tell you, this is a really special evening, and I am really excited with the guests that we have tonight. Dr. Paul Offit, a name probably very familiar to listeners of this show, recently backed out of a radio debate with Dr. Tony Bark. This was scheduled on the Mike Gallagher radio show in New York. And we at the Know Your Rights Hour weren't willing to let Dr. Offit off the hook so easily. The entire staff here at the Know Your Rights Hour, by entire staff, I mean, well, me. We weren't willing to let this go and not to let Dr. Offit off the hook so easily. So we scheduled for this evening so evilly. That was probably what that's the proverbial Freudian slip was. Anyway, oh, we're just getting started, too. This is going to be great. We scheduled a second attempt for these two to go head-to-head. Now, I sent out a notice on this in my regular e-newsletter list, and I think some people misunderstood this, so I just want to be clear right up front. This is a satire, a parody of a vaccine debate for entertainment purposes. Okay, now that that's out of the way, hopefully we'll be sued, a lot less chance of being sued for that now that we've put up the disclaimer. We'll just have to see. So, you know, we really didn't have time to weren't successful in getting to Dr. Offit directly, but we have managed to get to him in a way that I only actually found out a few minutes ago. We have a gentleman on here who is a professional psychic channeler, and he is going to channel Dr. Offit and get him in here, even if it's against his conscious will on the outer conscious levels. And now, this is a little bit experimental, I have to confess, and I actually happen to have some experience and knowledge and information about this phenomenon known as channeling, and I know that it's really hard to objectively verify who you got on the other side. You know, they can tell you who they are. So we're just going to do our best, and we're going to go with it. So first of all, let me bring in our Mystic. Mystic, are you with us?
I'm here. I'm fresh off of a sounds channeling Dr. Jekyll. I'm not sure whether I got Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but hopefully I'm clear of those now. My mind is clearing out, and we can channel Doctor Who.
No, we don't want Doctor Who. Yeah. We want Doctor.
Although Dr. Jekyll is probably a close match for Dr. Offit.
It may be a challenge keeping my mind clear of that one.
Okay, so do you need, you know, any special silence here? Do you need for us to hold hands or think the right thoughts? Or can you just go right there
think
to
of holding,
Dr. Paul
think
Prophet.
Of holding
everyone,
hands.
Okay, for everyone listening, we'll just think of holding hands mentally and just see Dr. Muppet. I mean Dr. Prophet. No, wait. Dr. Paul Bearer. No, I'm going to get it right here. No, I'll tell you, you just go ahead and do your thing. Don't let me interfere with you here. And you just tell us when he's through, or maybe he'll speak to us and let us know.
Well, let me see. I think I can hear something. I can feel. I'm feeling coming through. Yes, I'm getting a little nauseous. I'm getting very nauseous.
Sounds like you got him.
Yes, he's here.
Yeah.
He's here?
Yes.
He's here.
Okay.
With a needle.
Dr. Offit, can you hear us? Are you with us here this evening?
I certainly am. I have an English accent, too.
Okay. that's terrific.
Just for the
That's what happens, you know, you have to take what you get with a channeler. But
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go ahead. You know, Dr. Offit, of course, is a very distinguished pediatrician and medical doctor. And let me just take a couple minutes to introduce Dr. Profit to our audience. He has published more than 130 papers in medical and scientific journals. He's chief of the Division of Infectious Disease Dissemination. He's the director of Vaccine Disinformation Center at the Lost and Wayward Children's Home in Philadelphia. He's a professor of numerology at the University of Pennsylvania School of Pharmaceutical Mysticism. And he has a new book out now called Deadly Choices, How the Anti-Vaccine Movement Threatens All of Us with Stock and Pharmaceutical Companies. So he is also a recipient of many awards. Dr. Paul Profit has been awarded the Psychopath of the Year Award 9 times out of the last 6 years. Apparently he was so adept that they gave it to him twice, three years in a row. I think it's the last 3 years. And he has been nominated for the World God of Medicine Award for the past 2 years, although that award has yet to actually even be invented. So this is really quite an accomplishment. It sounds like this is not the first time that Dr. Fall Profit has actually worked with mediums. So, Dr. Profit, welcome to the show. Next, I would love to introduce Dr. Tony Bark, but you know what? I'm going to pass that mantle on to her because nobody knows Dr. Bark better than herself. And Tony, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure and honor to have you here and to give you the opportunity to follow through on that debate that you were so rudely deprived of recently.
Thank you so much. That's, you know, I really am glad to have this opportunity. It was such a disappointment when, you know, there was a whole 2-day period that Dr. Profit had, Paul, sorry about that, had agreed to, you know, debate me, and it was really just on parental choice. You know, it was going to be on parental choice. Do parents have a choice? And he had told the radio show producer that he understood parental choice. So he was willing to debate it because he really did understand why parents felt they should have a choice over their children's health care. He wasn't for it, but he certainly understood it. And so he was just told he was going to be debating a doctor from Chicago. And when he called the day before, he was given the name, and then it was a few hours later that an email came in, and you know, he backed out. I mean, I'm sorry, Paul, but that is what you did, and I know you didn't like that I posted that, because I saw your Facebook posts saying that you were tricked into it somehow, and I'm not really sure how you were tricked. It was pretty open and clear that we were going to talk about parental choice, and I think that maybe you looked me up, and this is my introduction. I mean, you probably saw that I wasn't just, you know, an average doctor, that I had, you know, published some things of my own. I've been a contributing author to a few books, and I've co-produced a film that I helped write and was based on my interviews during my recent master's in medical science with a focus on disaster medical management. I'm trying to manage your medical disaster, Paul. I really am trying to manage it, and that's why I'm fighting these bills that you're part of the team behind. But I think vaccination injury is a huge medical disaster that needs to be up front and center for all of us in disaster preparedness and management work. I am an MD, and I do practice medicine. But I was quite disappointed when you backed out, Paul. It was, we had a lot of people. It was going to be a big show. It was going to be a really big
diarrhea.
Show. You had diarrhea.
I had a sudden case of diarrhea.
Because you probably took one of your own rotavirus vaccines. And as we all know,
diarrhea is a very
common side effect from that vaccine.
All right, pull back the claws.
I only had a slight case of interception.
All right. Now go back to your corners. Now we'll bring you out one at a time to fight when the bell goes off. So, Tony, anything else you want to let us know about your background, and then we'll just jump right on in here.
Well, I've treated a fair amount of vaccine injured kids, and I do medical legal consulting. So I have worked on a fair amount of cases in family court where there's disputes over what the parents want to do. So if they've decided to not vaccinate and then get divorced, it's almost always the father that changes his mind, although I do have a case in Australia right now where it was the mother. And I do have a case in the vaccine court, and I'm my medical practice is really focused on homeopathy and nutrition and biofeedback, dealing with the dysautonomic reactions that the vaccine injury causes. But basically, you know, I'm in here fighting the good fight because I feel that we can't get kids healthy if we're damaging them from day one.
All right. Well, this should be a very interesting debate because you both have some really impressive credentials with respect to your respective sides of the issue here. So I want to go over real quick the rules here for the debate, and then I will be the moderator, which is only fair because since I have no particular bias one way or the other on the issue, I'm really quite a neutral person. I am really just one of the ideal people to moderate this, and also for one other reason, because I happen to have some legal expertise, I can help distinguish the medical and legal questions, and I'm just going to be upfront with both of you guys right now. You're both doctors. If I hear, and if we get to some audience questions, and I hope we do, I hope listeners will call in, but I'm going to start off with some questions, but if listeners would like to call in and put your question to our debaters, you are welcome to do that. And that call-in number, again, is area code 646-478-0772. But if we get to a legal question, I might jump in and we'll save that for the end or maybe for tomorrow night's show. So I want to keep it focused on the science and the medicine and the politics here. Okay, so here are the rules. The answers will be timed, a strict time limit. I'll figure out what that is as we go. Okay. You can pass on a question if you want to, and that time can be added to your next question time or, I don't know, whatever I feel like doing with it. Now, I'm going to use a coin toss to decide who goes first, and then we'll probably alternate unless I randomly do something else. Now, each party will be given an opportunity to rebut the prior debater's comments in my discretion. Now, we have a panel of judges here that can sound in at any time. Maybe we'll comment on, you know, who they think wins a particular question. Not sure if that's going to happen or not. Let me see. Judges, are you here? Yes, I'm here. Okay, so we're set. We're ready to go with that. Now, let's see. I talked about the legal questions. Now, I reserve the right as moderator to invent rules as we go on the spot, enforce any of these rules randomly and at the will as I deem appropriate, necessary, entertaining, or punitive. So we, I think now that everybody knows the rules, we're ready to go here. Okay, let me see. I'm going to toss the coin here. It lands on Dr. Offit. Dr. Profit, you will go first then.
Wonderful.
I'm going to pose this. I'm going to pose this. Just going to throw an idea out, and I'd like you to expound on the idea. And you'll have, oh, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes to do that. Okay, here's the idea. Regarding vaccines and the idea that there are some people who feel like they shouldn't have to be vaccinated if they want to or should have an informed choice or whatever, this is something that's just a byproduct of the fact that we are a victim of our own success, that vaccines are so successful that we don't even realize we need them anymore. Dr. Offit, please respond to that idea, that comment. We're a victim of our own success.
Exactly. People used to die of colds before vaccines, and people used to die of coal mine cave-ins before vaccines. You just don't realize how lucky you are living in a time when there's vaccines. Herd immunity. Imagine a herd of cows that were not vaccinated. They'd all die. And if at least 95% of humans not vaccinated, they get sick. And, well, you know, some of them get sick even though they are vaccinated. Well, some of them get sick even when there's 100% vaccinated. But we should ignore that because most groups of human beings who are vaccinated are still alive.
I'm sorry, your time is up, Dr. Profit. Let's go on to
I think I explained
Dr.
that
Tony
very
Mark.
Well.
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. I think we got it right
you
there
the
after
message.
The first
you
four or five seconds. Okay, Dr. Bark, your response to the idea that with vaccines we're a victim of our own success.
Yes, well, you know, that sounds great in theory, and there's no one better at rewriting history than the pharmaceutical industry and the medical establishment. They've done that repeatedly. But may I remind you, in this country, we had many people catching and dying from tuberculosis, and we never vaccinated tuberculosis away. And I use tuberculosis as an example as opposed to yellow fever, because tuberculosis is caught through the ear, respiratory, so it's quite contagious. And it can be. It's in droplets in the air. If you share a space with somebody and they have tuberculosis, you can catch the bacilli. It's a bacterial infection, mycoplasmic. But, you know, we never used the vaccine. Now, in Europe, they used the vaccination, the BCG. And in Europe, the thinking is, oh, we vaccinated away tuberculosis. At the time, people were catching tuberculosis and going to sanitariums and dying from tuberculosis, let's say late 1800s, early 1900s, people were also dying in very high numbers from scurvy, from diarrhea of all causes, from just about anything that they caught, because two factors, well, more than two factors. Let's talk about those factors. Scurvy. There was a huge death rate from scurvy. Well, people who die from scurvy clearly are vitamin C deficient. And if you're vitamin C deficient, you're probably deficient in some other vitamins. And that also means your innate immunity is not working. And if your innate immunity is not working, you're going to die from the next major infection or even minor infection that you catch. So scurvy, the fact that scurvy rate was so, the death from scurvy was so high implies that there was a lot of nutritional deficiencies at the time where people wouldn't be dying from scurvy in high rates, as high of rates as they were dying from anything else. So that's one factor. We had trucking and the railroads, you know, in the early 1900s we had the railroads, and we, you know, we had obviously a little after that we had cars and trucking, but the railroads first. And what that did was that brought lemons and limes, and that brought some vitamin C to the northern latitudes in the winter, and scurvy disappeared. And as scurvy disappeared, the death rates from just about every infectious disease came down. So that's one contributing factor as to, you know, if you look at the graphs and you look at when we introduced vaccinations, let's say to measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, you know, even diphtheria and tetanus, although those immunoglobulins were out a lot sooner actually. But the death rates were already down to where they are now. So if you look at the rate, the regression analysis, which is a term for looking at the rate of decline of an XY graph, you can see that, in fact, all these disease deaths and even the statistics on these diseases were dropping. So a lot of the diseases weren't even as numerous as they had been, but the death rates had already steeply declined, way before we introduced the vaccination. One of the other things that people forget is that in the 1950s, we instituted IV fluid treatment in ERs around the country, as well as asthma treatments. So, you know, people who would normally die of diarrhea, whatever the cause was, whatever triggered the diarrhea, because they were, let's say, having vomiting and diarrhea. Sorry to be so graphic, but without IV fluid, you know, it's easy to die from an illness that's causing vomiting and diarrhea. And because in the 1950s we instituted IV, you know, fluid treatment in the ERs around the country, we stopped seeing those deaths from all causes. So I don't think we're a victim of vaccines working so well, and that's why we forget, oh, without vaccines we'd all be dying. I don't think that they did what people think they did. I think that, you know, if you actually look at the graphs, the diseases were on their way out, the death rates were on their way out, and in fact, when we introduced a lot of these vaccinations, whether they were live viral or not, there was quite a little jump up in the death rates. Certainly that was the case for polio. Certainly that was the case for measles. We had several, I think we're on our fifth measles vaccine, because the first few were so problematic with people catching atypical measles after the vaccine that they had a much greater risk of dying and required immunoglobulin. So we've had many iterations of the measles vaccine. We certainly had an incident with the polio vaccine on its first iteration, the Cutter incident, where I think 50 children in Chicago died just from the first onset. So, you know, I think that that's a great
30 seconds.
Theory. It's a great theory. We know that the proponents of vaccine love to say that. Paul, you love to say that. I saw you say it on some interviews. But the truth is, you're lying. You're lying. You're lying. And you know you're lying.
I'm not lying. I just don't know what you're talking about.
Back to your corners now. Back to your corners. We'll take this one question at a time here. Now, Dr. Brooke, I apologize for giving Dr. Prophet a little extra time on that question, but he's kind of outgunned here, so I want to, you know, try to balance that a little bit. So I hope you'll be understanding with that. Anyway, let's see. Let's move on with some questions here. Now, I may give you some fairly open-ended questions, folks, but we're going to just do the best you can in a short amount of time. So let's see. Last time Dr. Muppet went first. So Dr. Muppet, let me give you the next question first then. Respond to this question. Agree or disagree and elaborate. Vaccines are very effective.
They certainly are. They certainly are. If you measure the antibodies produced by patients who are given vaccines, especially when we put lots of aluminum in them, they respond beautifully by producing lots of antibodies. And as we know, antibodies are the key to immunity.
Okay, well, that was a really thoughtful and elaborate and intelligent answer there, Dr. Nothing, what was Prophet or whatever your name was again. Dr. Bark,
sure.
I'm sorry to sort of, you know, embarrass and humiliate you here with these overwhelming answers, but I have a lot of, you know, respect in you. And go ahead if you can and offer some sort of response.
He's right. I mean, he is right that when we put aluminum in these vaccines, and they're in the non-live viral vaccines, it does stimulate more immunity in terms of stimulate more antibody production, and unfortunately often more autoantibody production, which I can go into. However, antibodies do not equate with immunity. We know that children with agammaglobulinemia, who have always existed throughout the ages and always had their childhood diseases and were then immune for life, even though they never had antibody production because they can't make them. So that's documented. We also know of outbreaks where not only were 95 or 98% of the children vaccinated to measles in the beginning of the outbreak, as in Corpus Christi, they started measuring everybody's titers, and even with a 95% response with measurable antibody titers to measles, those children still developed measles. We have many other cases like that where we know that innate immunity is actually much more important to staying healthy and getting through disease than acquired immunity, which is the antibody response. And again, the agammaglobulinemic patients who used to get measles when they were able to get measles, they were allowed those, you know, it was legal to get real childhood diseases in those days, they actually were immune for the rest of their life. So antibodies are a measure of something, but we're not really sure. They're just a measure that you've had that disease, you've been exposed, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have immunity.
Okay, excellent answer there. You really held your own there, Dr. Bark. Let's see here. You know what? We are close to break time here on the show. I'm going to go ahead and take a break a little bit early so that we don't have to cut anybody's answer short here, and we will be right back. We are only halfway through. We have lots more to go this evening. I want to hear from both of these experts on a long list of questions here. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. And I'm your host, Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Special guest this evening, Dr. Paul Offit, by way of Mystic Channel, who we'll introduce to you in just a little bit, and Dr. Tony Bark. So lots more to go, folks. Stick around. We'll be with you in just a couple of minutes.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alter Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back live with the Know Your Rights Hour. Your host and moderator, yours truly, Alan Phillips, vaccine rights attorney, and special guests, Dr. Tony Bark. And Dr. Paul Prophet, is the channel still clear? Are you still with us? Are you still there?
Still nauseous. Still nauseous, yes. Yes, he's here.
Okay,
he's here.
Okay. Now, Paul, you're not thinking of backing out on us here, are you? Because this is really, I'm going to have to level with you guys. This is not looking too good for you, but we're going to finish this hour out here. So I just want to remind you.
I haven't even brought up the topic of gravity yet.
That's actually one of the questions here.
I think I'm way ahead. I think I'm way ahead on this one. I'm not going to back out while I'm winning.
Well, I just want to remind you, Paul, that I still have those pictures. You know, the motel, you and that teenage flu.
Oh.
Don't
I'm here.
Get any
I'm
smart
here.
Ideas.
I'm here.
Defying,
I'm here.
But that part of you
anyway.
Is defying gravity.
Yes. He's in here in spirit form.
Defy gravy?
Doesn't apply. You know, that explains a lot now that I think about it. I hadn't thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to this is the question that you never bring up because it's just too controversial, and yet at the same time, it's not controversial at all. It's already been decided. Dr. Muppet, I'm going to go to you first. Vaccines, do they cause autism?
Of course not. Of course not.
No. That's a terrific answer there. Appreciate that. No, I'm sorry. Your time is up. You're only allowed 3 minutes for these answers. So we're going to go to Dr. Tony Bark. Tony, I'm sure you'll have an answer that is, shorter than the 3 minutes it took Dr. Muppet there to Dr. Muppet up or whatever to address the issue. But just briefly, because, you know, we really don't have all night for each question.
Sure.
Can you give us a brief introduction to your I assume you disagree with Dr. Prophet.
I do disagree with him. And, of course, I'd like to challenge him, and I'd like him to tell me what study actually would qualify to meet the qualifications, to meet the definition of attributable risk. He's saying, Paul, are you saying that it's a zero attributable risk of vaccines to autism? Is that what you're saying? It's zero?
Absolutely.
And so that means that you'd have to look at the rates of autism in the unvaccinated, in the completely unexposed. You know that. Do you have a study that you can quote me where you're looking at the rates of autism in a completely unexposed, meaning unexposed to vaccines, population? What study is that?
Well, those people who've not been vaccinated are lucky enough to have the protection of the vaccinated, and so
for herd immunity against autism.
I'm going to jump in here and help out Dr. Offit, because, you know, sometimes when you're coming through in spirit form through a channel, you know, you don't have your full wits about you. So Tony, Dr. Offit has been quoted as saying that there are 14 studies that have proven vaccines don't cause autism. What is your response to that? Do you have a study that proves that they do? I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
There's many different scientific studies that show, in fact, I just got results back on one of my own very own patients on antibodies to receptors in the brain that vaccination can stimulate these autoantibodies to different receptors, NMDA receptors, calcium channel receptors, potassium channel. These are voltage-dependent receptors in the brain that alter behavior in such a way that depending on when, so if it's a 10 or a 14 or a 15-year-old, they're going to look like they're psychotic or defiant or bizarre, but if it's a 2 or 3 year old, they're going to look autistic. So there's a lot of different ways. I don't believe vaccines are the only thing that can cause the autistic spectrum. I think there's, you know, I think we know that there were cases of just children exposed to mercury straight out, didn't have to be a vaccine. But I do believe that there's plenty, I mean, there's hundreds of independent research that talks about autoantibodies from different cell lines that are in vaccines, because a lot of vaccines are grown on human tissue. And so you create antibodies to them, to the parts of the human tissue, which can cross-react to you in your brain. So you can have a lot of chronic activation in the brain, microglial activation, or, like I said, receptor antibodies to different receptors in the brain that would alter the way your brain functions. Some are related to aspartate glutamate, and some are really related to oxidative damage. And so there's many different ways that they can cause alterations. I think that children look autistic depending on when during the development they have developed these autoantibodies or had damaged mitochondria or oxidative damage. We don't have any studies that he's referred to. I've seen the studies he's referred to. There's not one that looks at the rate of the disease in question, which in this case is autism, in the exposed population, which is the vaccinated, and compares it to the rate of the disease, in this case autism, in the unexposed, completely unexposed population. Paul has said in the past, Paul, you have, right? You've said that you think it's unethical to do that study because you imply that means you would be withholding vaccines from children, which of course is ridiculous since there's tens of thousands, if not a few hundred thousand, you know, children in this country who aren't vaccinated by choice and are already, you know, well into their teens or 20s or 30s. And there could be a retrospective study done. But, you know, this is Paul's excuse. And so he has none of the studies of the 14 qualify to meet the definition of attributable risk. And that is the only definition of attributable risk. There's not multiple definitions. There is only one. And you must look at the rate of the disease in question in the unexposed. And that is part of the equation. And without doing that, you really can't say with any clarity or definitiveness that vaccines don't cause autism. Just can't do it.
Okay, terrific answer there. And just under the time limit there.
Just under the 30-second time limit.
I was just getting ready to call time, and you just finished right on. So I can tell you have really studied and are prepared for this debate. So I'm going to move on to the next question here. Let's see. Since Dr. Bark spoke last, we'll go to Dr. Offit this time with the question. To be different, to start a new question. Dr. Offit, are the let me ask it this way. I'm sorry. Let me start over. How dangerous are these childhood infectious diseases? Dr. Offit, go.
Deadly. Before vaccines, children died of measles. It may have been decades before vaccines, but it was before vaccines. what's a few decades between friends?
Right.
Anyway.
let's see. Are there any other childhood diseases, or is it just measles?
No, there are mumps. Very uncomfortable. What was the question? Oh,
how dangerous.
Are they really bad?
Are these childhood diseases dangerous?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you call polio a childhood disease. You know, it's open to anyone. Very dangerous. We might have called it aseptic meningitis eventually and, changed the diagnosis a little bit. But, I mean, what's changing a diagnosis a little bit between friends? I mean, it's, potatoes to potatoes. Let's see, other diseases. Pertussis. I mean, we might call it croup sometimes, especially if they've been vaccinated. If they've been vaccinated, then, instead of calling it pertussis, we call it croup. Because, of course, they couldn't get pertussis if they've got, that's whooping cough, if they've got vaccinated. Croup is very nasty. Croup is very nasty, but it's not as lethal as if you call it pertussis. If you call it pertussis, then they might die from it. What other diseases?
Paul,
yes.
What virus causes croup?
Croup?
That's RSV, right?
But
where did RSV come from, Paul?
Tony, you'll have your turn in a minute. Now let Dr. Offit finish. His time is running.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your time has run out, Dr. Prophet.
Oh,
and,
I think I was convincing that.
I think you nailed it there, and I think you've really backed Dr. Bark back into a corner. I think this is the place where we find out whether or not Tony's I had to go there. Okay, I'm sure you've heard this all your life. We're going to find out if her bark is bigger than her bite here. All right, Dr. Bark.
I have a pretty bad bite. I have to tell you. I do bite. It's not fun. I have a big bark, but I do bite.
My guess right up front was that they're probably pretty much running neck and neck. But
we'll let
our audience decide when they hear you here. So, Dr. Bark, are these diseases, how dangerous are these childhood diseases?
They can be killers. Any virus, any disease can be a killer if you are deficient in key nutrients so as your innate immunity is weakened. So if you look at rates of what children are on the globe die from, nutritional deficiency beats all of these things, right? So nutritional deficiency is above death from measles. It's certainly above death from just about anything else. But the caveat of that would be that somebody who's so nutritionally deficient would also react poorly to a vaccine. So they're going to have more of a vaccine reaction than somebody who's not. But in a nutritionally sound child, these diseases are not dangerous. The death rate, we love to hear, Dr. Paul, you love to say the death rate for measles is 1 in 1,000, which has just not been the case. It wasn't the case for a few decades leading up to the introduction of the vaccine in the United States. And we've had examples of that because, I think the UK introduced the measles vaccine about a decade after we did, and they had a big outbreak in the late 60s where there was about, 55,000 people who contracted measles, and I think there were there was 15 hospitalizations and there were 6 deaths. But that's not 1 in 1,000. You had adults, you had infants, you had all kinds of people in that outbreak. We haven't seen 1 in 1,000 death rate in this country in a long time. Now, it is true that in refugee camps and in tent camps, were basically refugee camps, that children will die, and people, adults as well, will die from infectious diseases. But you have to remember, they are usually lacking in zinc. They're usually lacking in vitamin A and C. They're often vitamin D deficient, and they also are lacking in clean water. So it's a very different situation. So in general, these things are not dangerous. But I have to say that croup, it's interesting you say that, because croup is RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. The real name of RSV is simian picornavirus. And simian picornavirus was one of the simian viruses that came into mankind through the polio vaccine. And this virus is responsible for about 8 million deaths a year worldwide in children. So,
okay, so
Yeah. So that's something
I'm
to
sorry,
think
did,
about.
Did you have a follow-up there? Or I didn't mean to cut you off because you still had a little more time left.
Well, no, so that's just something to think about, that's the fallout from introducing 40 different simian viruses into mankind with one vaccine and then creating yet another problem that kills a lot more kids than polio ever killed. You know, even if the polio vaccine, even if it did what they said it did, we did create a much bigger problem with more deaths by piggybacking some of these viruses into that vaccine and how they got into mankind. But the interesting thing about the croup is that there was a lot of outbreaks this winter of pertussis in teenagers, in completely fully vaccinated populations where only the vaccinated teens got pertussis. We had 15 kids in Cape Cod at a high school. The 5% who opted out of the pertussis vaccine at that high school, none of them got pertussis, and yet it was blamed. You know, the whole outbreak was blamed on them. And in my area, in Chicago, we had two high schools together had about 25 cases, all vaccinated, and one of them was my son's girlfriend who received all her pertussis vaccines. And my son is 18, and they made a habit of exchanging saliva weekly, and he never had any pertussis vaccine, and he did not come down with pertussis. So he probably did have a croup event that was actually pertussis, and we just wrote it off as croup.
Okay, time is up. Again, you have timed it superbly. I'm not sure how you do that. It's just uncanny. So that's just incredible. Well, the next question here is kind of a loaded question, but it's one we have to ask. And so I'm going to ask both parties to try to be focused and clear with your answer to give the best introduction to what I'm sure both of you would love to turn into longer answers than we have time for. So with that in mind, let's see. We started with Dr. Prophet last time, so this time we'll start with Dr. Muppet. Dr. Muppet, are the vaccines safe?
Absolutely. Completely safe. You know, all these anti-vaxxers that say that there's mercury in there's not mercury anymore. We used to do that a little bit, but it was in such minute doses, and they kicked up such a fuss that we took it out. Aluminum's good for you because it produces the lots of juicy antibodies. The formaldehyde, tiny amounts. I mean, heck. It'll preserve you. You'll live longer. It's good for you. Antifreeze. Well, it's the nice kind of antifreeze. It's propylene glycol. It's not ethylene glycol. That would kill you. Propylene glycol is the kind, nicer antifreeze. The ingredients in there are in such small quantities compared to the water. That they're very, very safe.
Okay. That seems very clear, in depth. I liked particularly how well referenced your answer was there, making all the cites to the medical literature. Tony, you got your work cut out for you here. Are the vaccines?
Well, I know
safe?
Paul has actually written about how he considers aluminum a nutrient. Right? It's a nutrient. And in fact, aluminum there's not one biological reaction with any plant, animal, insect that has aluminum. It never interfaced with any biological process whatsoever until we started mining it. And implying that ingesting is the same as injecting is a big farce. We all know that. So, you know, if you ingest aluminum, which many people do. I mean, antacids, there's a lot of over-the-counter medications that contain aluminum. But, you know, it goes through the GI tract and does get excreted through the bowel. And, you know, while some might be absorbed, certainly, a lot can be excreted. Whereas when it's injected in a closed system, it has to be detoxified. It would have to go through the kidneys to be excreted. And that just doesn't seem to be happening. So it's very different to imply, you know, it's one thing to imply ingestion through the mouth. It's another thing to compare ingestion and assume it's the same thing when you inject. And it's just, there's a lot of research looking at aluminum toxicity in the neurological tissue. It's not just one site. We have Chris Exley's lab looking at aluminum toxicity. We have University of British Columbia. We have researchers up there in the ophthalmology department looking at aluminum toxicity. There's a meeting every year in Exeter College on aluminum toxicity. Formaldehyde does occur in your body in minute doses, but it is a carcinogen, and the amount in vaccines is much larger than what would be in what one body would be exposed to in any one sitting. Plus, it's in a lot of the vaccinations. And the reality about mercury is that while it has been removed for the most part in vaccinations, pregnant women are encouraged to get the flu shot, and that's loaded with mercury. And while the CDC recommends it, if you read the inserts, it actually says not tested, not assessed for safety in pregnancy, and they're considered Class B and C meds. So we have the CDC recommending mercury-laden flu shots in pregnant women, and we have OB-GYNs and family doctors who are following CDC's guidelines and not bothering to read the insert and are very unaware that there's mercury in that vaccine. And we know that the earlier their exposure of the fetus, the greater the risk for autism. And I do believe, Paul, that those of you that are behind flu shots for pregnant women, that push came out of the realization that the earlier the exposure, the greater the risk for autism, and that we want to do away with regressive autism and have people born with their autism. So it's genetic, and we can't blame external forces anymore. So if we can get all those kids who are going to be susceptible to turn out, to come out of the womb already damaged, then there's no regression. Isn't that true, Paul? Isn't that really the real reason that we're pushing flu shots on pregnant women?
Your rebuttal, Dr. Prophet?
They're more at risk, so they need more. They need more drugs in general.
Really put you on the spot with this one, Paul. I can see the difficulty
pregnant,
you're having there with this one.
Pregnant women should not pass on influenza to their babies, and the placenta. The placenta sees to you know, most of the mercury, the nutrient aluminum and formaldehyde and most of it. So it keeps the baby healthy.
Warm.
But how would you know?
But I'm gonna jump in here too, because I'm gonna help you out here a little bit, Dr. Prophet, because Dr. Bark's really, really not being fair here. She's only thinking of herself. She is completely disregarding the many, many hardworking Americans who have invested years of their hard-earned money in pharmaceutical stocks, and she is just not being kind or considerate about their chances of actually earning money from the increased administration of vaccines. And I just think she's really being unfair. And I hope she will, you know, this is really... It's not appropriate for a moderator to ever take sides, but I had to jump in this one point here just to sort of balance the scales here. So, all right, forgive me, everyone. That was, inappropriate for moderator, but that's my piece there. You know, I think we've got time maybe for one more question here, and what a shame. I want to thank both of our guests this evening. This has been just a delight, insightful. We've only scratched the surface. We could come back here for weeks to explore the topic, and maybe we can get one or both of you back, again in the future and in one form or another and delve into these topics deeper, because we've only scratched the surface here. But let's see. I'm just going to spin the dial and see where it lands. Okay, let's go with this one. Dr. Prophet, your reaction to this comment, true or false, any elaboration or insight or what have you, and I'll just let you both know that we have about 3 minutes here, give or take, together, combined. So need a quick answer. Okay, here's the assertion. My child had no reaction to the vaccine, so there's nothing to worry about. Dr. Prophet.
Well, thankfully, the miracle of modern medicine is that you won't probably have measured your child's IQ before and then after the shot. And thankfully, most of our wonderful vaccinating MDs don't measure toxins in the body before and after. And who knows, you know, any joint problems or gastrointestinal problems or neurological problems, there are many different causes, many, many different causes of those. So thankfully, those other causes will really, you know, keep the blame off of vaccines, which are a wonderful thing.
Okay, well, as we're getting close to the end of this evening's show, I would really like to thank Dr. Fall Prophet for coming through the channel this evening.
Do I not get to rebut him a little bit?
No.
I'd like to add something to him.
I'll give you a chance here. I just want to make sure I have a quick minute here to acknowledge him, because I don't think I'm going to have time after I let you do your rebuttal. So that's where I'm coming from here. But I would like to a special thanks to our mystic channeler this evening, Dr. Robert Murdoch, an acupuncture physician in Florida, and his email address, website, naturalfamilyphysicians.com, naturalfamilyphysicians.com. Dr. Murdoch, thank you so much for your participation this evening, and if you can thank Dr. Prophet on his way out there for us, we certainly appreciate it. All right.
I'm feeling
out of the last few
moments.
Oh, gosh,
what happened? What happened?
I'm
feeling better now,
I've got to jump to Dr. Bark here for the sake of time. Tony, as concisely as you can, your response. But Dr. Tony Bark, first, thank you so much for joining this evening in tonight's debate and presentation. And your website, disease-reversal.com. And Tony, your response.
So my response is that what's lovely about vaccinations, there's always secret hidden treasures like possible prions and rogue viruses and foreign DNA lying dormant, and we just never know when those things are going to become active. One more thing to think about.
Would you say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say with respect to that vaccines in any way, shape, or form constitute a large-scale experiment without consent of the experiment subjects?
Well, sometimes there's consent, but I would say that it is large-scale experiment for the most part. There, like I said, you know, sometimes there's some true informed consent in studies where people, you know, I volunteered in the 80s in the Hep B vaccine study, and by the way, 4 doses, never mounted an antibody response, whether that means anything or not, and about half the people didn't. Everybody
wow.
I knew, we were all residents, and we never mounted any response, and they kept going, wow, we'll give you another one and see, and we just never mounted. But that was informed consent, kind of. I don't know that I knew there was what was inside there. I actually didn't know what the ingredients were. But yes, for the most part, it's one big experiment. And there's all this post-surveillance studies on the part of the government and the drug makers that really doesn't ever get to public because they're curious to see what happens. It is one big experiment, unfortunately. And you're right. For the most part, it is there is no informed consent.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, once again, for being on this evening. It has been just a delight to have you both, and we'll have you both back together or separate again in the future. Certainly hope to do that. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Special guest tonight, Dr. Paul Prophet, coming through Dr. Robbie Murdoch and Dr. Tony Bark. We are here every Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, folks. See you next week.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the